All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Serious Angler Podcast, powered by our friends over at X2 Power Batteries. After a unintentional week hiatus, we are back with the captain, Mr. Andy Full, and as always, I'm your host, Bailey Eichbrett. Andy, we set out with actual plans to have episodes last week, but I was traveling for work, and it became way more hectic than I had originally had planned for.
Imagine that, work trips being non-hectic, right? Like,
yeah, I don't think that exists. but nonetheless, it was like one where like, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll get shows in this week, and we had plans to do them. And I'm like, damn, this is running late. Can't exactly leave this right now. And just ended up being, we couldn't do any shows last week, so we apologize. But if you're keeping up with the network, there was a great Business from the Bass Boat show, as well as Lure Lab. That is out. So that's the nice thing, is we can't get any Serious Angler shows. We always have a couple other shows in the network to fill you guys in on some good bass and knowledge nonetheless. But
absolutely.
Yeah, we're back tonight with a great guest. Our pal, Mr. Josh Douglas, is going to be joining us tonight. Talking about some hard truths of a pro angler. And we've seen that kind of tossed around here, but and we're going to obviously get into it when we get Josh on here, so we won't dive too deep into it. But just to kind of set the stage, there's been a lot of that conversation around the industry of pro anglers, things like that. And in my mind, Josh is in the bucket of anglers that, from a prong approach, from a guide to pro, to has all the business end like in check and dialed. Like, you see, I think there's very few guys that do them all and do them all well, in my opinion. Josh is one of those.
Yeah.
And we're going to obviously dive into how balance and all that and things like that. But thought Josh would be a great person to talk about it. And also get to catch up with him because he's a good pal. Obviously, we love him, talking smallmouth with him. He's a hockey guy. So it always creates for some fun conversation. But nonetheless, Andy, for folks, before we get Josh on here, download us real quick on what this past week's Lure Lab show was all about.
Oh, yeah. So what did we go into here on the Lure Lab? I apologize. I am all over the place. Yeah, we talked about the Rapala Crush City cleanup craw and kind of the versatility of the new bait that came to market. And I think there's going to be a lot of functions and techniques and baits that you can thread it on or fish it standalone. It's a really good episode. Dove into a couple colors and baits that you can add it on to or fish alone, and it's probably going to catch a lot of fish. And the best part about it is how durable it is, in my opinion. And there's going to be a lot of action with a highly durable bait. Is something you don't really ever see. So yeah, it looks good.
Interesting. Okay.
Outside of being a LasTec. Yeah. I like
so it. So it's like as close as you can get to a LasTec without being a LasTec kind of deal.
It's not stretchy though. Like at all. It's just durable. Like it's a tougher plastic, but it still has enough action to it. Because a lot of times when you stiffen a plastic, it dulls out the action of the bait. Yeah. So, and it has a lot of movement throughout the entire bait. I think it's going to be a good one.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, guys, all the links to other shows are down below, as always. But one thing to quick mention, too, is the new Blackfish rain suits are on the website now. I don't know. I haven't checked Omnia yet, just yet, to see if they're there, but if they're on Blackfish site, then they're very quickly will be on Omnia as well. And of course, as we mentioned, if you're looking to get some of the Blackfish stuff that we always talk about, that they're all on Omnia. So you can say, use our Omnia fishing discount code and save you guys some money on Blackfish as well. But nonetheless, check those out. Last week was hectic. As I said, we had, I had a work trip out to Wisconsin. So I got to go see all my, work folk and some people I don't get to see all that often. So it was nice little trip. Unfortunately, we couldn't get shows out, but maybe it was good because Andy and I might have went at it after the post Bills Eagles game. If we had a Tuesday night live last week,
it would have been fine. No, that was 2 weeks ago. We already talked about it. I'm pretty sure.
Was it?
Yeah, because Bills had a bye week.
Oh yeah, that last weekend we got manhandled by 49ers. And we got manhandled by the Cow. My DMs were flooded when people have been learning that I'm an Eagles fan. I had a bunch of Cowboys fans in my DMs on Sunday.
Oh no.
Like, dude, I'm talking like 1-2 in the morning, all the way up to like all throughout, like, even today. Like,
yeah, people signed up for it. You signed up. Yeah, I mean,
in all fairness, it was just like fun banter. So I'll give him that. It was good. You got to take the licks if you're going to give it out, and I sure definitely give it out when we win. So it made for some fun conversation. But dude, it's crazy. Not to get too deep into this, but I don't know if you've seen the recent AFC picture, but like 8 teams are 7-6.
Yeah, it's wild. And then Miami lost last night to the lousy Titans. So, like, what the heck?
Yeah, everybody's losing, I guess. But either way, we'll save some of the football talk for the end of the show, because
let I think them all keep losing, and I want the Bills to keep winning so we can make it into the dance. That's all I care about.
It's so, making for like
an exciting end of the year.
Team bias aside, as a sport fan, yeah, it is awesome right now, because you don't know what the heck's going to happen. It's one of the best years I remember in a long time watching the NFL.
Yeah.
It's for pure, no one knows who is going to beat who week in, week out. It's interesting, but nonetheless, let's get our pal on here, Mr. Josh Douglas. What's going on, man?
Dudes, what's going on?
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Of course, dude. You know, you always got a seat, but you got to tease us with this dang man cave you got going on behind you. I'm so freaking jealous of this thing, dude.
That's sweet.
It is. I've moved around a lot in my life, so I've been up here by Lake Mille Lacs now for like 7 or 8 years. And just something I've been working on over the last season or two and getting all together and dialed up. And it's got like the tool side over here and closets and all, like, but I finally got organization in my life, so it's pretty nice, pretty exciting to have something like that. It gets harsh. It gets real harsh up here in northern Minnesota here these next few months.
Yeah, no kidding. When I talk with my wife, we've been talking about, because we haven't had our first like legit house yet.
Yeah,
and we always talk about, I'm like, that's one of the only thing I ask for. Like, you can have your big closets and everything you want. I want either like a garage or a barn space or something. Like, we're at least space to add, like build something. I gotta have that, because like what you got going right there is exactly like what I'm envisioning. TV, bait walls, you know, deer heads all over. Like, that's
yeah, the deal. Man. It's awesome to have everything in one spot and just heat it. It ain't the biggest one in the world, though. You know, as soon as you get it built, that everybody says, you'll say it should be bigger, and it's exactly what you say, but this one, you know, is perfect and affordable to stay warm, and it's just a good place to keep everything. I'm waiting. I got to just run and go pick up my boat. I just got some stuff rigged up on it, so my new one's in, so it should be right behind me for this, but it's not yet. Still doing a little trim work and stuff around here until it comes in.
There you go. Dude, so total rabbit hole, but that system you have right there from that man cave, I feel like people look at it and like, oh, I don't know if you need all that for fishing, but like for what you do day in, day out, that like efficiency in itself probably helps you, one, save more time, but helps you just work a lot more efficient, whereas you're going to this side of the house to grab something, this side of the house to grab something, and it's like, if you're like Andy and I, you probably lose a lot of things in that case, where here you got it all in one room.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty new, so this is new for me.
I was still getting used to the new setup.
Yeah. I keep thinking I'm ready to like work on fish and stuff, and then I either go sit in a tree or sit here and find another project to do around here. But no, it definitely has, even just the efficiency of doing like a podcast like this, where I have everything, you know, around if I wanted to show you something or whatever. Nice to have.
Well, to quickly touch on it, because I have been in like the craziest FOMO / deer fever of my entire life lately. Just I don't know what it was, but something just hit me like a month ago where I'm like, I'm going back all in on bow hunting, because I used to be a diehard bow hunter. Like once like August would hit, like I'd still fish, but like my mind's set on bow season. And for whatever reason, it hit me again this year. And I've already like been getting stuff way, way, way too early ready around here. But I know you mentioned you've been hunting all November. Did you have any success?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Actually, it was really the worst year I've had in a long time. A couple things happened. One, I technically got a deer. I smoked one just outside Chicago, and road going like 80 miles an hour, and I still don't have my truck back. And that was like the first week in November, and they don't even take my phone call. So that's my wrap truck too. It's like my work truck. So I don't even know what that, they won't even take my call at the dealership right now. Like that's how far out it sounds like things are. So it happened so quick. All the driving I've done my whole life, I've never hit a deer before. I've come so close. And it was, of all things, like in the toll road between Rockford and Chicago, closer to Chicago. And
the last place you'd expect.
Yeah, one car just jetted from the in front of me to the left and replaced itself with the deer. So technically I got one. And I was on my way to deer hunt. I was coming back from doing some seminars out in Charleston for Shimano. And so I was jetting to the deer stand when I hit that thing and then had to figure out how to get home. We're out there with the damn Sawzall trying to cut the bumper off of my tire on the road. And a little old doe does some serious damage. I tell you what, it's pretty.
Yeah, especially at 80.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I saw a few. I got a new muzzle loader this year, so I knew I was going to be putting in some time during the muzzle loading season. And so I kind of did pass on anything that I had the opportunity to shoot right away, which I usually do. I'm pretty like, I don't know. I would shoot a doe under right circumstances. I just never do it right away in hopes that a bigger buck or something like that will come into the property. So anyway, saw a lot. And then muzzle loading season came, and I literally didn't see anything during the day. It was some of the more boring sits I've ever had before. So, yeah. So it's just one of those. I think the deer right away on the first day of opener is probably a good sign that
I got. So I'll pitch this question out to you, but also anybody in the comments that is a angler and hunter. What in your opinion is the worst to go through, either a day on the water where you don't catch crap or sitting in the stand when you don't see anything? Which is worse?
They're both the same. Both pretty terrible, both of them. I mean,
I feel like I would still take the day of not catching anything because at least you're doing something. Whereas, like, you're not seeing anything when you're in the woods.
If you're not seeing anything, you're probably taking a nap.
Yeah, maybe I'd probably say fishing, just hunting. I'm kind of used to sitting there for a long time, not getting nothing. So when it happens with fishing, it would particularly irk me, I think.
I think Andy might have a good point too, because if you're not seeing anything, you're probably just snacking and napping. It's probably a nice life, actually.
Relaxation. No, I hear you with the bow. I got a bow. Got a bow a couple years ago. It's something I'd really like to take real serious, but I'm usually guiding all the way up until the gun season. So it's like I miss all of that. And all that time I'm out fishing all that time. So I really can't get too serious into putting in the time to bow hunt right now. So maybe one day, but I got no problem looking at them through a loophole and whacking them from 200 yards away. I'm all right with it.
Whatever. Yeah, take them out, you can get them. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something I heard through a new guy that's actually working with us at Gunpowder, for folks that know, that's my full-time gig, Ben Anderson. He's a college angler out in Minnesota. He was saying that the hunting in northern Minnesota, not to go on a whole hunting kick here, guys, but I promise we'll get to fishing, but just something I thought was really interesting, was northern Minnesota, the hunting is suffering because there's so many more wolves now.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a lot of wolves. Even here at Mille Lacs, I mean, I've seen more wolves up here than I've seen coyotes since I've lived here. And I mean, for rightfully reason, you know, wolves don't really let coyotes hang around. You know, you get down towards the city or even just half hour south of the lake and it's going to be all coyote territory. But up here, you run into packs of wolves. I can hear them at night howling. I can't touch on it too much. Only because, I mean, we've always had them in Minnesota. I think Minnesota's only state outside of Alaska that never lost its population of wolves. They do protect the heck out of them here. You know, I like having them. At the same time, probably everything needs to be managed to some degree, especially or look at it, or at least have the opportunity to be able to manage it if it indeed is hurt in certain areas, like what Ben was saying, which it is. It's no doubt about it. And they, even the moose, they're trying to get the moose to make a comeback in Minnesota, which would be really nice. But you know, it's going to be kind of hard. But at the same time, you know, wolves eat a lot of beavers. They eat a whole, they actually kill themselves more than anybody hurts them. That's just how they are in territory. They kind of check themselves, but definitely we got a lot of them up here, and they're protected. You know, you go just across the border where Gussie's at, and they're not protected.
That's right. He's the guide for them, right?
They may. Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yeah. He did back in the day.
That'd be wild.
Yeah.
That's,
I always knew that guy. He was a cat guy, you know, and you can tell he was a cat guy, you know?
So he's like, screw them wolves.
Yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt. Let a lynx come around though, and he'll probably give it a can of tuna or something.
Yeah. He'll make it a pet.
But yeah, I mean, it's hurting like any, that's a whole big old there's a lot of politics behind the wolf and a lot of feelings and stuff like that. So, it definitely, yeah, we're Austin Felix hunts. I know he's posted videos of wolves and stuff coming through up there. And if you're seeing them, that's, that usually means there's quite a bit of them, because that's an animal that doesn't let you, you know, see it very often.
That's nuts. Michael Bradley here says he has an old Minnesota Moose jersey. Well, what is that?
Minnesota Moose. That would be.
That's not hockey, is it?
Wasn't it? Was it old? No.
I don't know. I don't even know the reference. I don't even know Minnesota Moose. It's like an AHL team, or is it hockey?
God, I think that goes back a ways. I don't think the Moose
It says hockey. What is it? It's.
I think it's.
It was an American professional ice hockey team out of St. Paul.
Yeah,
St. Paul. International Hockey League.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yep, that's pretty wild. That'd be pretty
It was AHL. That's freaking sick.
Yeah.
Dude, you gotta show people if you can that the hoodie you're wearing right now, because they'll think that's cooler than Minnesota Moose.
It's the Browns backs. I donate some tackle to a hockey team that's also a fishing team, little youngsters, so they're called the Browns backs. Actually, their dad, who I believe is their coach as well, you know, we were in the same Bass Federation when we first started back in the day and stuff like that. So when I donated much stuff, the next thing you know, I had a hoodie, and I thought it was pretty cool. CCM too, you know, it's like,
yeah, the hoodie's legit. Sweet.
It's legit hockey threads as it gets.
Yeah, no kidding. I still think that's the coolest freaking damn team ever. That needs to be to the NHL. Immediately.
Oh yeah, I think New York should probably rename their teams, or the Red Wings should be the Bronze Backs or something. No, that's
something.
That'd be a cool team name.
Yeah, screw the Sabres, Andy. It's the Buffalo Bronze Backs.
I mean, it'd be fitting for Buffalo. So
What is a saber? Like a saber tooth tiger?
Yeah, that's the dilemma, right? Like, it's a sword, but the mascot is a saber-toothed tiger, but it's a buffalo is the emblem. Like,
yeah, right. It's everything.
Like, you ever see like those meme videos? It's like, hey, how'd you come up with this name? It's like, you know, we're going to be the buffaloes, but our logo is going to be a saber. And it's like, what?
Throw it all away. Bronze back.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. That's your buffalo education for you. Or nothing makes sense. but man, let's start getting into the conversation of the show, and that is, you know, regarding, like, there's been a lot of conversation around the industry of what it means to be a pro. Is it actually hard? The truth behind it. And like I was saying in the intro, there's very few guys that can have like a multi-prong approach and do each thing well. Like, you have your business / social media side, you have the actual pro tournament side, and then you have the guiding side, and being able to balance that is like, it's nuts. And I think that's something that you fall into a very, very small percentage that can function and do it well. And I wanted to hit on that in regards to how you did it so successfully. And I know you have we see more and more of it nowadays of, like, you know, you and Bree and Hunter and Felicia, like some guys that have a family business, if you want to call it that. But how was it for you, you know, being on the elites? And it's a dang hard thing. Like, even somebody like yourself, and it shows the talent and skill level and dedication it takes to be on there, not being on the elites now, but like, I think that's a testament to how tough it is. How are you balancing that on the elites, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, like you said, I'm not on the elites no more. After 2 years, I didn't qualify. You know, you get immunity after your first year, and then the second year, it's kind of an accumulative then, which would be your career. And I'm sure you guys have talked about, you know, how you stay. It seems, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I love the way they go about deciding who gets to come and stay this given year. It seems like it's kind of a flavor of the year thing, or maybe a moving goal line a little bit and all that. But bottom line is people, they have to turn it over for sure. That's definitely something that they need to do, and the strong survive. Whoever I feel is fishing the best right here, right now, within the last few years of whatever, because the sport just is, in 10 years that I've been here, has just changed 3 times, it seems like, and like evolving in what you should do. And that's, you know, so big. If everyone wants to say NASCAR or NFL or, you know, whatever, it's like, you got to kind of stay up with times, or you're no longer as dominant, you know, as you once were. So there has to be turnaround on the Elite Series. It's the Elites was more like a dream thing for me. I never had it before. I always wanted it, but just really wanted to fish at a high level. I kind of grew up at a time when FLW was real strong and Bassmasters was real strong. So it was like, you know, we're talking like the Brent Ayler, the Scott Martin on the FLW side, you know, guys like JT Kenny and Wheeler, and you just name them off, the competitive Wesley Strait. I mean, I could sit here time blue in the face and list off the guys on that side. And then the guys on the Bassmaster elites, like KVD and Ike and Brandon and all of them, were equally good. So I kind of came up at a time when I didn't, you know, there's multiple avenues that I saw and how to be a professional bass fisherman or how I could get it. But the biggest thing is you need to have relevance, right? Like in my opinion, you don't need to, but you got to come from somewhere or have something to offer that is tangible, you know, via accolades or, you know, have done it in the past, to turn around and be able to teach somebody that people would want to listen to you in the first place. And then from there, then you got to get into that. They got to buy product, right? So then there's a business side that this whole thing comes across. So I just, if you can balance the fishing, the fishing is what I want more than anything. It's the only thing I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have an open credit card to just go and do that. So I just had to figure out how the heck I was going to do it. And, you know, getting to the elite level was great, but it was something, you know, I made a living at the sport well before I was ever on the elites. And now I can use it as a launch pad, you know, going forward in my career. And, you know, that's equally as exciting too.
Right. Yeah. Like, I think when obviously you had qualified and you were on the quote unquote rookie class.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the talk was, he's going to have the easiest transition because you already had the business side set up. Like, you had the emphasis on social media. You had Bree doing the photography, things like that. And you'd been around the block. Like, you understand what was needed of you. Whereas somebody coming up, like especially some of the rookies this year, not saying that they're ever going to be in that position, but they might find times where it's going to be a lot of wake-up calls, or it's going to be unexpected events, or it's maybe some of them that don't have big social media right now are finding that it's a lot harder to get sponsorship dollars, because it's, as you know, you've seen the transition, like you just mentioned, even in the last 10 years, where I'd argue every pro right now, they're number one, of course, they want it to be all fishing. They all wish it could just be about catching a bass and making money.
Yeah.
Or that's not the case anymore. It's a brand is like, yeah, great, you do well in tournaments, but like this guy in 80th in AOI sells more products, so we're going to go with him. Mm-hmm. Like it's a whole different ball game now. And how do you stay? You mentioned staying on top of the trends and the changes.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's easier said than done, but like, how is that something that you've done to transition from where you were at to like kickstart and seeing that social media was becoming a thing? Was it something you did on purpose, or was that because of guiding, or like what was the reason
of starting? I mean, just you know, my naturally I'm a hustler. That's just what I you know, what I'm going to do is try to figure out, you know, I was bartending at night, I was guiding during the day. The goal was to fish professionally, tournament fish professionally, and have a show or something, you know. Then it was a show, like a legit TV show. Now that's kind of a blurry, you can go about that in a whole heck of a lot of different ways. Now, so that was kind of always the goal, for me at the very start when I was getting into it, was I know the business side is I have to, one, convince a marketing manager who may be super dialed into fishing or may not be dialed into fishing at all, might even hate fishing, but that's their job. And I'm just one of the categories they look over, to convince them that I'm worth their investment. Then once I can do that, which that's a very, very hard thing to do. So you want to be somewhat cutting edge in marketing stuff, you know, whether that be a website and a Facebook page like it was when I started, or now, you know, an Instagram, you know, everything under the sun. And then yearly, you got to convince their bosses through them that you are delivering on why they're getting, you know, why are we giving Josh Douglas X amount of dollars? So in my eyes, I just always looked at it like, well, not, I got to sell that and then some. And I ask a lot of anglers this, how many, let's say just a simple dollar amount, like $5,000. Now, $5,000 might be a real big sponsor amount to somebody right now, currently at their point in their career, or it could be the smallest sponsor won't even really take that kind of sponsorship, right? But right. When you get those kind of sponsors, how are you going to actually, I ask how many pros, how many of you are any industry, anybody who's trying to make money in this industry, I don't want to just isolate pro bass fishermen, because there's a lot of different ways through YouTube, through everything, but how many legitimately sell $5,000 at MSRP of the product that they're selling? And I would go to bet that there's some that sell millions, and then there's some that don't even sell the $5,000, but they're still ranked or fished or at an equal level. They, you know, maybe even the one that doesn't sell it is kicking their butt, but they're not worth that. So at the end of the day, the business is just not going to make sense. You know, I really don't want to, I try to stay as positive as everything. And I hear some of the chatter in the sport and stuff. And I'm the type of guy that keeps my head down and just like a buck, just try to keep moving. But the stuff Ben got into with his milk, and when he got into the whole business side of it was awesome, you know. But a lot of that was common sense. But I realized very quickly that to a lot of people, it just wasn't. Like, they just, I fish good, give me $10,000. Well, yeah. It just truly doesn't work that way, because you have to produce. And if you produce, from what I can say in the sport, is if you produce and deliver and your end goal is the customer, that's you take care of them, whether that be on shows, you know, going to expos, whether that be at tournament or, you know, fishing tournaments, the classic, doing this kind of stuff, whatever it is. As long as you're doing, as long as that's your number one thing, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay in this sport. And, you know, you got to do it all. But at the end of the day, I just think that you back in the 90s and stuff, they could hide who you were, you know, like you can't do that no more. They could make you act like you have a personality, and just cause you're a catching number, you had it in, or you knew somebody. And I'm not taking nothing away from nobody, but that's just how it was. You know, you had a camera crew would fly out, and a photography crew would fly out, and your seven pros would fly in, and it's a big, big thing. Well, now companies need more than just a weekend worth of content to compete, because we all know we need to post today. And if you don't think you do, then you're already should probably go do something else with your life. Because the biggest thing about social media, and where we circle back to when I came into it, is, wait a minute, you're telling me this is a free way I can advertise myself? It's a free way that I can advertise my abilities as a fisherman, what my sponsors bring to the table. It's free. And again, and I've said this many times, if you can't do that for yourself, why in the hell should a marketing manager think to give you a dime? You can't even sell yourself. How are you going to sell their product? Yeah. And that's just the blunt truth. But here's the other thing. I understand the side of you just want to concentrate on fishing, and there should be this top 100 anglers in the world. That's the upper echelon. And when you get there, the roses fall from the sky and all that kind of good stuff. But again, the blunt reality to that is there's just a lot. There's more than just 100 people that can compete at that level in the world, you know, more so than maybe any sport, because NFL, you need to have a natural God-given talent of being huge before you can even start. Basketball, you got to be, you know, 6'4", 6'5". You have to have some sort of a net. Fishing, don't get me wrong, you have a lot of natural ability and the cream will rise to the top. But, you know, you don't have to be God's gifted athlete to even first get a – now, you might need to have a giant bank account this day and age, but you don't need to have a six-pack to necessarily be a pro basser. But yeah, I hope I answered that right. It's just, I'm trying to tie in like what you said with the different levels and then guiding. That's another thing. You know how many guys said when I made the elites or when I got on the FLW tour after making the cup and stuff, like, you're going to quit guiding. And I just keep going harder and harder. I mean, I get to stay on the water a lot. I meet a lot of cool people and I put good people on good fish. They just keep coming back year after year. So why wouldn't I?
Yeah, and I feel like for you, though, you've talked about it all the time. And I hear it from you that you truly love guiding. So yeah, I feel for you, at the end of the day, like, while yes, you'd love to be on the elite still, you're totally, like, because you mentioned it, you're like, even when I'm done professional fishing, like, I'm still going to have guiding. I'm still going to do it because you love it. So it's always a good, you know, from your standpoint, like, it's all positive, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like I said, the elites, and who knows, maybe I'll try to get back this year. I'm fishing the Northern and the Southern Opens. You know, I really want to win. I've had seconds, multiple thirds. I haven't won one of these things. I just really, really, really want to win one, and maybe not worrying about points and stuff like that will help me get to that. But there is some business side to it. Since this is a business show, I'm not afraid to get into it. It's already such a gamble to try to get to the Elite Series, period. Okay. Now, I think if you love it, you should absolutely go for it, because you can make income and make money for your family without ever getting to the elite stage. Heck, you can get to the elite stage and then go totally broke once you get there. I mean, it's you know, big boys playing for a lot of money over there, but it's, you know, bass has to figure bass. I don't even want to signal bass fish. Bass fishing as a whole needs to figure out its hierarchy, right? Like how it's going to work there. And I'm not the only guy having problems right now in the bass fishing world that knows how to catch, you know, bass at a decent level. There's plenty of them out there that can probably fish a circle around me that may be out of a job next year because everything is changing in the sport. So there is something to look at it like that. Young enough to where I can go doing whatever I want with my life, but old enough to where I should make some better decisions, you know, to try to make sure that I meet a good end game. And then you got to look at the requalification. When I made it to the elites, nothing really changed a whole lot contract wise or anything like that for me. I was already pretty well, pretty well sponsored and had long lasting relationships with these companies through the opens, you know, before the opens to from the state level to the opens through the FLW, MLF, and then just right into the elites. Not a whole lot changed there, but then you got to look at the requalification process to try to get in. So now I got to fish a full series, which is the most cutthroat series in bass fishing anywhere is that I fish. Definitely the best talent would be on the elites and at the FLW tour level and stuff like that. But you have that, plus you have 250 boats or whatever the heck it is, and it just makes makes for some terribly tough cutthroat fishing. I am a little bit excited about the new rules, a little bit less practice time, all that stuff to try to get there. But then I get there and Bass is going to continue to use these last 2 years against me, which was a 50 something out of 90 something. I finished my first year and an 83rd out of 104 my second year, which balanced me out somewhere at like 30%, but somehow that got me kicked out of like the bottom 8%. So you got to look at kind of like, I have to look at that. Like, so you get, again, I don't know if it's right or wrong. I don't know where I land on it. Anglers will never all agree with each other because we are all in a different position at this given time, and our position will change. You know, you always got one guy on the verge getting kicked off. You got one guy winning the AOI. You got classic stuff. You got one guy that's been here and put in 30 years on this, 20 years, whatever, 15 years on this circuit. I've been here longer, you know, and then Bass lets you drop for every 5 years. You get a drop year. So that's something I'm not going to get for 3 years.
It's like the sorry to interject, but it's like the we'll put the comparison of Mahomes throwing a fit finally because a call didn't go his way, where it has been for years now, where it's like on the other end, like if you're on, you're going to be trying to position to stay on the elites, where a guy that with the current method would be on the elites, he's obviously going to boust for that. You know what I mean? Where it's 100%. Whatever position you're in, you're going to fight for that. Where if like, it's hard to ask a guy on, especially when you have your career or you want to stay, whatever, like it's hard to ask somebody to step back and look at it big picture and be subjective and be like, yeah, I guess with this, even though like they're going to be out when you change it like that, it's, yeah, it's hard to ask somebody to do that. You know
what I mean? We want to go, and step back and be able to get a calculator and do fast math and see what helps us and what doesn't help us, and then turn around and that's the thing. And so I realized that going in. My biggest thing is the elites was a dream come true. I competed. I never had that top 10. That's what I needed. I needed a top 10 to stay on the elites, and never did. And honestly, if you don't get a top 10 after 2 years and don't make the classic, then you probably shouldn't be there anyway. Though if the mathematics were there, I'd always want that chance. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would happily take the chance to go back and fish, and you just never know when your next tournament is your, you know, your next day is going to be your big day on the water. So for me, it's just, I knew what the rules were when I signed up. You know, I knew what it was at the start of the year when they changed the top 70 deal. And you know, I knew if I got outside of that top 70, then it was going to put me in a pretty vulnerable spot. And I chose the wrong year to fall outside that top 70. So at the end, that falls on me. And the best thing about it is, you know, you, if you complain, you're going to come off bitter, right? Which is never it. And then why in the heck would you want to tarnish, seriously, the best 2 years of everything I've chased? Why would I want to tarnish that going down? Instead, I'm just going to use it as a launch pad. And there's not a lot of people that can say they've been there that have competed at that level that held their own. And when your biggest goal is to do well for your sponsors, more importantly, push good content to my fan base that has helped me get to where I got today, it seems to be a pretty pretty clear path for me of which direction. And then we'll see. You know, I gotta win one, dude. I gotta win one. So we'll see if this this newfound approach gives me and Bree more time to do stuff with our sponsors, get inside those Shield stores a heck of a lot more, bring out good content, because there's no doubt about it, that's where the future is, whether you want it or not. But I can tell you this, as a Bass Pro and as a Bass fan, I want as much content as you got. I mean, whatever's out there, whether I choose to watch it all, you know, is on me. Yeah, I think there's a lot of crap out there that I don't watch, drama, but what industry does, I guess, doesn't have that. But if you got a new
humanity, where is there not drama?
Right. But at the same time, if you got a new knot better than an FG or something, I'm going to be tuning in. I'm the first guy to tune in, you know, as fast as I can, because fishing is just what I love. And like, honestly, if you're sick of me now, you're only going to get sick of me worse, because now I just got to work. You know, it was hard work keeping up with them dudes on the Elite Series. Boy, they don't mess around. I promise you that.
And that's one thing I think people don't look at or don't see enough, obviously, because I think most guys don't show this, or at least don't talk about it per se, is when at that level, obviously you have the tournament side, you have the practice for the tournaments, you have the social media and the business, you know, the media trips that you get invited on, like you're talking about speaking for Shimano conferences, things like that, or seminars. But like outside of that, it is a time on the water and trying to keep up with this arms race that is the skill level of anglers, as you mentioned earlier, rapidly increasing.
Yeah.
It's like it is each year. It seems like anglers are coming up with something completely new, or they're thinking about it differently. It's strategy. It's not just who can skip the best under a dock. It's completely different now, where it's to your point, like it's hard to keep up when, especially when you have so many business things going on, that's where that can kind of get in the way. Like, I know you could talk about it. Andy can talk about it. Like when you guide for so long and so many days, that can, well, yes, it's time on the water, but it also can get in the way of getting in to go experiment and trying something different, advancing as an angler. I think you can speak to that, right?
Me? Yeah. For sure. Yeah. This was the first year I actually saw it. I was always the exact opposite, was a mega advocate for being a guide, because it was more, I fished way more instinctual in the past than I would now. Now I want almost like dead nuts clarification. You know what I mean? Like I want to see, or, you know, like I want confirmation all the time of what I'm looking at through the technology, and I'm more dependent on the technology now. I think more than ever. But at the same time, this year I did see with the guiding, you know, I thought it was helping, because, you know, a lot of times I sit up on the front of the boat and I have each of my clients on each of my hip, and I'm moving the sonar around and I'm looking at stuff. And if that's the way we're fishing that day, you know, or as we're creeping up around waypoints and good drop offs and stuff, and we're kind of scanning and looking, you know, I was pointing to them. But what I wasn't doing was making the cast. And one thing I saw, like at Champlain, I can in a million years would have thought I was going to leave Champlain with like an 84th place finish, or no, I finished second to last. I broke down, but I would have still, even if I made it back that first day, I'd have finished like 80th, something like that in the standings. And, you know, in practice, I found those fish day two, halfway through practice, found them. And, caught like 22 pounds before I knew what I was doing. And I never chased that kind of a fish before. Never a smallmouth doing that. Matter of fact, if you go back in my career, spotted bass have costed me an elite spot on, I think, a couple occasions in my life. And these fish were acting like, you know, spotted bass. They were up over 40 feet chasing bait. But it was dead calm and I could pick them off, no problem doing it. And I was like, man, I'm going to win this damn tournament. And then I went there and we had, you know, 3-footers everywhere, and I just got smoked. And I'd sit there right there in the mix and watch Koya and watch Taku and Felix and watch these dudes around me and Cody Huff. They were catching bass 10-1. You know, it was just like, oh, like such another level. But there's two part. I can say, yeah, okay, I needed to spend more time on my trolling motor doing that this summer, catching up. Yes. Yes. But I also needed to be finding those fish, and those fish aren't where I fish. They don't do that as all, you know, they don't chase bait. We don't have bait fish. So it's something that I had never done. And here at the same time, I'm fishing against the best of the best of the best at doing that. So you quickly see now I'm getting good at it fast. I would love to have a second crack at that day on the water now. But, yeah, I mean, the competition's there. The guiding, I think, is good because it keeps you out of the water. But there's no doubt now I'm looking at, like, what's funny is I might not be fishing the elites, but now I want to be the best bass fisherman I've ever been in my life. Like, I'm actually aligning my sponsors, and they'll be more into this. I'm a guy that stayed with the same sponsors for a long, long, long time, never leave, and I still, for the most part, am whole like that. I mean, that's I'm very fortunate with the companies I'm with, but at the same time, I'm looking to work with companies I truly believe in and throw baits that I want to believe in, because if I do that, it's so much more easier for me to do my job, and I have a heck of a lot more fun out there fishing. And you know, that's it, man. You get one life at it, and I just want to be out on the water doing it. So I'm going to figure out some way to keep doing that.
Heck yeah. Yeah. And that's like we're saying, like just a cap that it is such a grind to do it all in one, where it's, you could be a rookie coming on and focusing so much time on the fishing where you forget that you have business deliverables to do, or it's, hey, this month went by and I didn't get the sponsor the content they needed, or something along those lines, where it's hard to balance that out. Like do you, and that's brings to a great question. Do you and Bree, with all the things that you get, you know, handed your way from sponsors, whether it's commitments, it's content shoots, it's whatever it may be, like you just need to go out and film content. Do you guys make a schedule of like, hey, Thursday, Friday, we're going to get out in the water and shoot this. Then Monday, we got to rocket to this state and do this. Like how do you best like juggle that? If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, Bree, for sure. It'd be a lot messier and stuff if I was in charge of. We're actually polar opposite. She's very organized, very much so a planner. I'm very ADD, very last minute, but like it works for me. But we found a way to work for both of us really well. And so she keeps us definitely in line, like where we got to be, when we got to be there. Deliverables are always a big one. You know, she'll, you know, making sure that we are meeting our deliverables with these companies and that we work with. And again, the biggest company of them all is Josh Douglas Fishing. So making sure we're meeting our demand of doing what we want to be doing and then delivering for the companies that we represent, we work for. So she's big in all. Big into all that. Matter of fact, I see it being a lot cleaner now. I'm still, like I said, still fishing a lot of tournaments. I even got a big one on Mille Lacs this year for the first time that I get to fish, a Classic Bass Champions Tour tournament that's going to be out there. I've never been able to, a real big format, like all the best fishermen from Minnesota and stuff get to be at it. It's actually an open. We usually got to fish the whole tour, but they have one that's an open. So kind of some fun stuff there. But I think Brie will get the opportunity now to kind of really develop a schedule and, you know, go around, travel, shoot content. I want to get by some lakes that are right next to big Shiel stores throughout the country so that it's relative content for not only the employees there, but more so even for the customers and stuff in that area. So they can, you know, get to know me. And I can get in some of those areas and try to teach them how to utilize today's tactics and do all that. So I see Bree definitely, I think, is feeling a little pressure now. You know, we always had the last 2 years you had the Elite Series, right? And I would say, when it came to content, being brutally honest, the last 2 years was our slowest 2 years. Just it was just a lot, you know, pre-practice, just try a lot of these lakes I didn't know. You know, you look at a lake like Lake Ontario, you know, first time I got to fish that lake was last year. Well, yeah, that we got to go into the lake. I fished that MLF tournament that was out of Messina, but that's basically another fishery at that point. Yeah. And a lot of the people I fish with have been there so many more times than me. And it's such a huge body of water. You got so much, you know, looking to do, and the weather can dictate. And so just to compete at that level, you just better be giving it your best foot forward while you're there, because, you know, one day it will come to an end, whether it's 2 years or 20 years, it will. But then again, it's bass fishing, man. You never know. 2 years and I could be back. I don't know. You just never really know, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah. But at least in your case though, like when you're saying that, you know, you're set up, there's a comfort blanket to a point with you, like, in regards to, you've shown your sponsors, your partners, that they need you, and that obviously you've created the relationship that, you know, like if you do make it, it's not like a 20-year-old rookie now where it's like I have to go basically introduce myself to all these people and hope that they'll help me next year. Where at least like when you find yourself in that position because of the work you put in, the balance, that you'll be good. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, you at least have that going with it, going into that. Like, if you were,
You could only hope, you know, that's the biggest goal you can with any relationship, really, you got in your life at any level of business. You want people to feel like, you know, you put your best foot forward for them and they can count on you, you know, to represent them, represent them always. Yeah, for sure. And, again, you know, I'm able to do more of this type of stuff. I found since I've been off the elites that I'm talking to a heck of a lot more anglers and stuff that were either competition before, so you didn't feel like you could talk to them. You know, what electronics are you running? How are you running them? What am I missing here? What does your brand have that my brand doesn't? What is this? What is that? You know, and just stuff that over the last couple few years, you've been doing a lot less. And I started even seeing myself starting to, where you rely on your skill set that got you there. And that, I think that's also the death of an angler too, over time, is you get stuck in that, and then you're building your brand. So you get more and more stuck in it and you can't evolve with the sport. Pretty soon we're going to be flipping grass again, because we've chased every open water fish down and they're just like hiding in the weeds.
Like, no, well, more.
Got to come full circle here at some point. You know what I mean? But boy, it sure seems hard to get to flip in the weeds and get a bite anymore. You know, it's like, I just go up there.
Can you imagine a world where all the smallmouth just live shallow and like 8 foot or less all year round, and how much fun that would be if they didn't just go deep?
You know, large mouth out in 40 and smallies catching punching now.
Yeah. It'll never surprise me. And of course I knew that smallmouth did like what they were doing at Champlain, but without the technology, you can't hardly see them. And whenever you do actually pick up a blimp high in the water column, it's like the only one that your deucer happened to catch. So you're like catfish, gar. Gar. For years, for years we've been saying that. And that's, I think, another thing that we're going to really see is bass fishing now. Dude, what a good time. I'm telling you, it's going to take a lot of work. Bass fishing, in my 10 years, that's given me a decade of being a bass fish, of being a national level, whether through opens, FLW, elites, give me a decade. And I've watched it turn from basically a southern bass fishing sport, with not a lot of northern anglers besides Kevin Van Dam and Ike Anelli. And then you had Brandon that kind of snuck in from the West Coast, and it kind of blew up to now. Heck, the elite field is half out of the north. And now Canada is just getting, I mean, you got Cooper Gallant, the Johnsons, obviously our classic champion Gussie. I mean, what you're seeing so good. And now you got international players like Jochimson, two classics in a row. You got, and then you got freaking, the ones that really are really kind of scary in the future, your Koyas and your Takus and Masayuki, and just the fishing, it's turning international. So now all of a sudden you went from, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma has always been, you know, in that mix to the whole country and Canada. And now they're coming from all across the globe. The sport's so accessible, man. I just see it changing. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. I didn't think the smallmouth were doing that. You know what I mean? I didn't think it was like that. Like, you just cast around, you see nothing. 5 minutes later, you see 10 big giant 5 pound smallies. Oh, no man's land, you know. But what's awesome is, heck, I can remember running past Fujita at a couple tournaments where it was a pretty clear, shallow bite, like Murray. And the dude's in the middle of a drain. So it's like not even a drain. Like a drain's kind of cool, you know. You're like,
just middle of nowhere.
Drains, you know, like that kind of sounds badass. No, he's like in the muddy, gross stuff. And you're just like, and it's just like, whatever, you know, I'm running by, I'm thinking in my head, like, that dude's lost. And then I get back in and he's holding up 7 pounders and stuff. And I'm just
like, what did I miss?
That was fiercely wrong, or I'm not even looking for the bass that dude's catching and kicking my butt doing. So I think it's going to be pretty fun seeing, but I think we're definitely going to see a lot of change coming in the sport, even at the angler level over the next 5 years, because of the arms race, like you're saying. You know, I just want to say that, like, I'm sitting out there in those big waves, and my you know, I'm pretty good for it sonar, dude. I'm pretty good at it. I utilize it a lot, you know. But I was always, you know, looking at stationary objects and then attacking the fish that utilize those stationary objects. So stationary objects meaning rock piles, boulders, grass patches, ledges, stump fields, whatever the hell it is. That. So now you got a fish that's moving, and you got bait fish that's moving, and you're trying to find your bait, and you got the elements of the wave. So, like I said, I thought I was pretty damn good at, trust me, I am better than 99% of the public at doing it. The fish, I just feel like I probably am. But like, they were like dropping Tom Brady casts without ever even looking up in the waves. And they're just like, not like, you know, I'm trying to like, yep. Oh, I was, oh no, I was there, you know, and it shines back and my bait's falling away, or I'm pulling it away from one, and I'm, you know, even the bites I did get, I kept losing because you're like, oh, nip, no, you know, you're just not doing it right because you're learning on the fly. But I'm literally, and I was not the only one in that field. And some of them are smallmouth absolute hammers that are now saying stuff like, dude, I'm getting out fish 10 to 1. It's crazy. Like, they're like, you need to be able to calculate them electronics, what you got, take on them elements. And I'm not kidding you, deliver Tom Brady like accuracy to where that fish is going and what it's doing. And that's how you're winning bass tournaments right now. And that's just that's a whole new angle. That's a whole new thing to do. So, you know, I'm sure everyone can do it, but I do see where some of the skill of that kind of stuff is going to start, you know, if you can put it in the right spot at the right time. And it's just a whole new thing, but it should be pretty fun. And the last thing I want to touch on is, what's up with, like, when I came up, all the big bad smallmouth anglers would like look down on you if you put a butt seat in your boat. And this is the Elite Series I'm going out on St. Clair. I literally pulled mine out of my rod locker thing. So I'm like, well, if all these guys got a butt seat, I'm using one and pulled mine out now. Now you just kind of see. Now the cool thing
to
do is just
a little easier on the neck as you're looking down, bouncing in waves.
That's the cool thing to do now. Just sit back, take a seat. Like me and you, Bailey, when you're running around on Ontario. Yeah. Don't come to the front of the seat.
Yeah, that's right. But dude, I mean, it's funny when you talk about that, because like, we'll put it in other terms that's happened recently with that, the dude that died from the skate to the throat. People say all neck guards are, you know, they're not the cool thing to wear, but now all of a sudden everybody's wearing a neck guard, you know, but just because it's the smart thing to do, obviously at a different level. But like, dude, I mean, it just made sense.
I've played hockey my whole life. I refereed hockey for years. My brother played through a lot of stuff. I've watched so many hockey games in my life, and I've never seen that happen before.
You just got to go look at Buffalo Sabres highlights. It's happened twice.
Yeah, I know. It does, and that's the thing. Now you're going to hear about it. When something crazy like that, I'm surprised it doesn't help more, but yeah, I mean, you could always, you know,
there's
at how many guys were, do they have to wear visors now? It looks like they almost, I think, in the NHL.
Yeah, I think there's like a vet rule for if you're in the league at a certain point, you can still go visorless. Like, I think Ryan O'Reilly still doesn't wear a visor. There's like five guys in the entire league.
But I mean, I'm still old enough to where I can kind of remember guys without a helmet. Not old enough to remember when the goalies would do it. That's getting back there, but
still guys that go out in warm-ups without them too, and that's the thing. Even that, I feel like that is more nuts to me than even in game, because at least in game there's one puck, where in warm-ups you got 50 of them flying around everywhere.
At the end of the day, we're talking about hockey players and making sense. That's just not.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
They're the only people hockey in the world player, that can, you know, lose what I mean, all four front teeth and get up and hop on the ice for the next shift.
The dude's you're not mad about a puck in the back of the head. He'll kind of laugh it off.
Yeah, that's right. They take pride in those scars.
Yeah, they do. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So speaking of that, this is actually one last point before we wrap this show up and let you go. But, you know, talking about that, there is a personality when it comes to being a hockey player. Yep. You got to have a level of toughness and just kind of I don't give a crap. Like, I'm just going to go, you know, I'm going to work through this. But in fishing, and this was a point brought up, I believe it was by Ken Duke, and we've talked about it a couple times, but something as maybe more of a tip, but also something I think you've done well. I think that like a Hunter Shryock has done well, Brandon has done well, Matt Robertson has done well, where we get into when the social media thing and what it was to be a pro has become this cliche, same old, like when guys are filming videos now, they're doing the same old video. Hey guys, so-and-so pro here, talking about this. And I feel like people are so tuned out to that now. It's like an iCast video at like in a booth in iCast. People just keep scrolling on through. They don't pay attention to it, where it's, you guys have done a great job of being yourselves on there. You don't try to put on a persona or anything like that, where it's, let people see the real side of you, because that is the only way you're going to build a community that has longevity, is if you show yourself when you're down, you speak your thoughts when you're down, you speak them, and you be yourself when you're up, and you show the different sides and bring people through the course. So like, that is more showing what people have done well, like yourself, and trying to balance all of this. I feel like that helps for, instead of trying to force yourself to be something you're not. Yeah. Where like I urge the new guys and guys coming up right now, where it's like Alex Redwine, I see more and more of it. I'll use him as a great example. The kid's a goof. He's honestly pretty dang funny. And he's letting people see more of that, and he's starting to grow a little bit faster. You see more people take notice of it. Where it's like it's stuff like that. Like if you have, I'll even make an example. Like when guys like take you for example, love hockey. I feel like if you embrace that side of you, one, I feel like it can help you get more non-endemic, you know, attention.
Oh, but for
like,
sure.
It just helps people attach to you. So I kind of like urge people like get away from the main flow of things. Just be yourself in it. It doesn't even have to be polished anymore these days. People like look at a Matt Robertson. I feel like people attract more to that nowadays.
Yeah.
That just raw, you know, yourself. Doesn't even have to be a 4K.
No.
Production. No. Just be real.
No, it's nice. Like if you got it, you know, and there's some stuff that you want to do that for, but again, it's just, delivering that. And I guess that's something that made this real easy for me. And I kind of said this on my Instagram and Facebook post when I, you know, made it official. I wasn't fishing the elites, but you know, when I walked off that stage, no matter where I was, people come up to me and, you know, I'm not, man, you're the best fisherman ever. You know, that's probably something that Brandon hears and stuff like that, rightfully so. That's something that I, you know, people don't say. I know I'm a good fisherman. I know that I go fishing every day. But trust me, I have to go fishing every day. I think to compete, but what I do hear people say is like, you make some of the best videos. I love your videos. Thank you. Keep those coming. They're so educational. If you can, and you know, it's like, I'd be dumb if I ignored it, you know, like that's, it's there. And I do have a lot of people that have helped me, supported me, you know, hit like on my posts and stuff, over the years, that now it's time to put all that back out there. But like, and what's kind of cool about it, man, is maybe the fishing's just starting, you know what I mean? Like now I can kind of go around and, you know how many bass I've pulled on in my life? Do you know how many times I've pulled on a fish in a mat down in South Florida and I could have been 13 pounds? I have no idea. I shook them off. You know what I mean? Like you worked for so long.
Just hit them, buddy.
No, no, well, you don't know because you're practicing for a damn tournament because you're so worried about points and you're so worried about, you know, like I need a bite to be there, that you know how many times I've probably had a, I mean, that's per se that I'm good enough to be around them like that and all the time, but still half the battle's getting them in once they bite, you know what I'm saying? So how many times in my life, like I don't want to do that crap no more. I'm going to stick them. I'm going to stick them hard and not worry about the points and all that. And honestly, in the last 5 years, the sport's changed so much that in 2-3 years, I could probably just jump right back in. Like I said, I'm not quitting. I'm still fishing. Hell, when I fished the pro circuit in the FL, that was 6 tournaments. So, you know, but at the same time, I mean, who knows? The sport's changing. We'll see what comes of it. But I can tell you this. I need to get out there with my forward sonar and my forward sonars and get better and better and better. And that's where we're going with it. So
are you running the whole 5 Koya setup?
No, not that much, but that's the thing. I don't need to do that no more. That's the thing about it now. I don't have to go, you know, I'm going to go and try to win down in Okeechobee. If I need five transducers down in Okeechobee, then I'm quitting. And then I'm actually going to quit the sport because how the hell am I going to look at a customer and say, yep, as soon as you buy a $100,000 bass boat and slap another $100,000 on electronics, call me and I'll teach you how to catch a bass.
Hey, if it comes to that point, I will
towel at that point, buddy.
Yeah.
If it ever comes to that, I will move to Minnesota and we will coach the Minnesota Bronzebacks. That'll be our retirement plan.
You're like, I've never fly fished a day in my life, but a fly rod and some waders on a stream somewhere and sound pretty dang good after.
Hey, this guy has been doing it.
When I started steelhead fishing like 12 years ago,
I had
a fly rod and I actually caught a lot of bass on it. It's an absolute riot. You know, and I guide not just for smallmouth and largemouth, but in the fall through winter and early spring, I guide for steelhead. And I'm like, screw it, this year I'm getting a fly rod. And I'll tell you what, it is enjoyable. Like to go out and you're like, I know I'm not going to catch much today, but I can listen to the creek battle. Like it's like
the face just made me, that made it awesome. He's like,
when you get one. When you get one on a fly rod, though, it's got to be like
chaos.
With my Marabou, my long Marabou light rod, just like a, oh, I got you.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I did it. I can't believe I did it.
Yeah. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Boys, I really appreciate you. You guys know I'm a big fan of the show, all that. Since I see X2 powered by, let me just say 10-year warranty on all them lithium batteries. They're priced right. Bluetooth capable, all that kind of stuff. I'm telling you, with like, you can't, if your goal is tournament fishing, then you gotta get in on the arms race. You have to start learning, unless you know something I don't. You have to start learning something, these electronics, and I just can't reiterate, since I see X2 backs this, I know that they do, you know, to show up at a Batteries Plus and get literally the best batteries out there is, it's not like something. It's like must. And nobody loves spending money on batteries. It's like spending money on tungsten, right? Nobody like loves to buy tungsten. Like
the best feeling in the world with X2 batteries is knowing after like the 85th day on the water in the row, you know it's going to work at the end of the 86th day for all 10 hours. Well, like
I'll tell you. No, 100%. I'll tell you what the best feeling of an X2 battery is how much lighter those lithiums are over the AGMs that I used to have to heist. The kayak road, the lithium batteries just got to be taking it. I mean, that has to be.
It's been the deal for probably 4 or 5 years now. But it's like, if anybody doesn't have a lithium, that's kind of like,
I mean, just to have this much competition, so we're starting to see a little bit lower prices, and at a time that everyone could use a little bit of a break on that stuff. Yeah. So,
it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I mean, that's a whole like show in itself. That obviously you would love to get Sean in, but like that whole lithium arms race. Like, I think there's so many brands popping up. Like, give it a couple more years, and you're going to see half those because a bunch of them are just going to die off.
Honestly, it kind of reminds me, I didn't mean to say it like tungsten, but you like remember tungsten was like a couple brands, then all of a sudden, wham, it's like 3, 4, 5 pages on the websites of stuff, but still it's not all good, right? Because some stuff's got like impurities on the inside and just because they can make it. But yeah, them X2 batteries, I just, you know, the one thing that I do want to say is man, it is a humbling feeling. There's no doubt about it. You know, you want to go out, you know, everyone wants to go out on top, win a big tournament and then retire from the Elite Series. But that's just not the reality to so many. But talking about my sponsors like X2 and Phoenix Boats and all that, man, my equipment was flawless the whole way through. You know, they carried me right through a dream, and now we'll just keep rolling.
That's right, man. Yeah, I'll add to that too. The air compressor and the jump pack they just added too. They got some special stuff coming down the pipe for X2, but 100%.
My boat was supposed to be here, and it was all supposed to be sitting there.
Oh, my man.
I'll be in my boat ready to go down to Florida. So
I know. Well, dude, before we let you go here, you excited for the opens to come up to Leech then?
Yeah, I am. Are these two things, like, can you see these two that I'm trying to, like, my jail
cell? It's just proof that you're just an angel. God,
I keep trying to – I can tell it's been a constant freaking battle for me on where I want to be.
See, if you stay between the two, it might look like you're in jail.
Yeah, no, I know.
Behind bars.
Dude, yeah. No, I'm excited about their whole schedule. The Southerns, Okeechobee, should be fun. It's been fishing really good last couple years. So far, there's been no major storms that I know of that gone through Florida, so that should be good. Santee Cooper is really, really a fun lake. I might have fished that series just because of Santee. And then Leech. I mean, talk about, like, this is the closest that Bass or any of the leagues have ever come for my fellow Minnesota peeps. I'm sure there's a bunch of them. I've heard rumors of several that are signing up for them or open, since they are so close. I mean, the furthest way is Detroit, and that's really not that bad for us. Yeah. So talk about a good opportunity right now if somebody wanted to, you know, dip their toes into the national stage and be able to fish three tournaments that if you win one, you can go. And there's a lot of really good Leech Lake fishermen. I haven't fished there since I only fished Leech like once in my whole life. It's only like an hour, maybe an hour and 15 from here. And it used to be just all largemouth, you know, that was it. And big largies at that. And now smallmouths have really boomed there. So now you kind of got a little bit of both.
You think they boomed or the electronics have kind of
both jolted them? Yeah, you're right. I do think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there ain't no doubt there, no, you know, with the zebra mussels and all that came clear water. And the
that helps a lot.
Were able to boom and just get bigger and stuff. But yeah, I would imagine that the electronics are probably accessing these fish a whole heck of a lot more and showing us fish that were. I know I want to, every lake that I've ever been to, I kind of want to like go. That's my biggest goal now. It's kind of hitting. I'm kind of starting over. I feel like it's at a time in my career where I need to and just hit reset. What I thought I knew at these lakes, my waypoints for how I caught them on Kentucky Lake back in 2018 might not be the deal no more, because I just showed up at Champlain, a place that I've crawled around and know like the back of my, you know, but you're just finding where those good rock spots. Now everybody fishes them and they can see what it looks like and they can see the fish there. So the fish just take extra pressure and, you know, you gotta change it. But yeah, Leech Lake, yeah, I think the electronics are part of it. And but it should be a good one. I think it's gonna surprise a lot of people. And hopefully we see, and then lacrosse. I mean, lacrosse is Minnesota on the other side, so it's not my most favorite place in the entire world to fish, but I'll go down there and give her hell. I got a little aluminum boat last year, so I'll be sneaking around pre-time down on the river and learning, you know, where I can get around and all that. I've never been able to do that. I got a little War Eagle Express little aluminum boat I can tool around with for pre-practice. It ain't tournament legal. It doesn't have live boats or nothing, but I can sneak around some.
That's pretty wicked.
Mille Lacs will swallow me in it, so I can't.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Well, man, anything else that people can look out for on the horizon for you coming up in 2024 before we let you go?
Yeah, no, definitely just follow me on my socials and YouTube, Josh Douglas Fishing. You know, it's real content. That's my biggest thing, is just real content. I don't have no reason to lie to you. I don't have no reason to hide it. Just bring what's real. We'll help people. Everyone wants to become a better fisherman. That's following me, at least, wants to become a better fisherman. And I want to be one of them that you tune into to get that knowledge. So please follow me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Josh Douglas Fishing. And guys, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. Folks, you can get it real easy. For the links to socials are right in the description for MP3 and YouTube. Just click right away. Highly encourage you to. As Josh said, and dude, always a pleasure. And hopefully with this year, we can get back on the boat again. Cause I think I want some revenge on that 1v1 from Ontario.
Oh yeah. Got the big one. That's all that really matters, man. All right, boys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good one. See you, man. Talk to you. Bye. Well, that was Josh Douglas. One of the true good ones in the fishing industry. Always a riot. I'm biased because he's a hockey nut, and I enjoy talking to those guys, like a Gussie as well. Guys that kind of cross all into that, and always good chatting with him, man. It's at the bummer, obviously, that he's not on the elites. It's got to be a frustrating thing, like he mentioned earlier, to be in that position and how Bass does the whole, if you qualify or you qualify. It's got to be so confusing. Like when he mentioned too that because he's been on the elites for 2 years, if he re-qualifies, they factor in his AOI from those previous 2 years. And I feel like, I don't know, man. Again, I think that's a whole conversation for another show that I don't think is worth getting into right now, but just doesn't make sense. But again, we're just fans. You know, we're not the anglers trying to get in. We're not the people behind the scenes making the rules. So it's all conjecture for us talking here. But maybe that's a business for the Bass Boat Show that Deacon get on with somebody for somebody from Bass, something like that. But nonetheless, always love having Dougie here on the show, and looking forward to seeing him at some X2 functions this year. I would argue a guy like that, and this is no negative or insult to Josh, but like he mentioned, he didn't make any top tens in those 2 years. That to him, very and surprising. Very. I mean, he was on live, but what happens when you're not in that contention? You don't get on live. And I feel like when you're not on live, or say Bass or MLF, I feel like for him, honestly, while it kind of sucks getting kicked off the elites, I feel like he's more advantageous to his sponsors now than when he would be on the elites. This is all just more time he can invest into him. You know what I mean? Like more time for content, doing what he wants to do. I feel like you're more advantageous because unless you're a Polinick, a Carl, a Zaldane, somebody that is one has a great brand, obviously has a following, like a Scott Martin as well, that is, you know, also does decently well to get on live. Like, they're obviously going to keep pushing their live people to be the people that have the bigger viewerships. You know what I mean? Because that's obviously, you know, that's business, right? Creates more eyes. Where it's, I think people that aren't in that bucket, they're more advantageous outside of if they have YouTube, things like that.
Yeah.
The value in, I mean, you can even take that to a whole brand level, which we're getting into business from the Bass Boat territory here, where I think the days of like, the ad in a magazine that's just a logo of a brand type of deal, those days are
long gone.
I mean, maybe I'm just biased because this is me, but like when I see a brand in a, whether it's a magazine or just the same old commercial on a live or a football game or something, I don't ever buy anything from that. I don't know. I feel like I invest in people and personalities, if that makes any sense. I know it's so important nowadays, especially depending on a stage of brand is in. But again, I'll save this, and we'll do a whole business from the Bass Boat Show with Deacon and talk about it. Maybe get like some marketing folk from brands to come and see where they look at ROI, because we all know, and talking with Josh there, ROI is perceived in very different ways nowadays.
Absolutely.
There's some people stuck in traditional ways of thinking, which there's still some value to be had, but as anglers evolve, fishing evolves, and fishing business needs to evolve with it. So, but always good to talk to Josh. To wrap things up, Andy, we have some fun shows coming up for people. And I'm pulling up the calendar here. So next Wednesday, we're going to get Friday's show figured out. We have a potential guest lined up. Just need to confirm before we share it with you guys. But next Wednesday, the 20th, we are going to have and we mentioned it recently on the show, is we're going to have a quote unquote, not so serious show. We're going to get some friends from the show, have a decently longer podcast with you guys. And we'll talk fishing, of course, but it's not going to be, you know, our straightforward educational as usual. It's going to be us kicking back, having a drink, cheers into the year, Christmas coming up. And we might even do some rankings amongst our best Christmas things like that, having some fun. We encourage you guys to come and join and be with us in that. We'll give away some Serious Angler gear, stuff like that for the new year. But then the remainder of the year, we have some pretty cool topics for shows coming up to get you guys engaged, and some pretty big plans behind the scenes for 2024. But Andy, Lure Lab, anything coming up for this weekend that people can look out for?
There's an episode coming Saturday. I'm waiting for one guest to potentially get back to me for that episode on Saturday. Have a couple episodes lined up here, so just stay tuned, and hopefully we can get the one up that we would like to get up. If not, we have some backup plans. So stay tuned for that. On Friday night, I will announce what the episode will be Saturday morning at 6 a.m.
Heck yeah. With that, I'll say too, well, we have a comment here from Scott saying, practice on that soundboard, Bailey, for the Christmas show. Don't you worry. I already have sounds that are downloaded to the soundboard for that specific show. Oh, no. It's going to be fun. but look forward. We're going to have some friends of the show join that one. Deacon, unfortunately, can't make it that week. So we'll probably, we'll leave it as a surprise. We'll leave it a surprise for people. But nonetheless, it's going to be a lot of fun. Pour yourself a drink. Come join us. Throw questions, topics for that show. It's going to be a good time. I think there was, and then last but not least, this week for Kayak Fishing Weekly, we are going to have John Dalton on from Creek Fishing Adventures. And then next week will be Greg Blanchard. So we have two pretty hard-hitting weeks from a YouTube standpoint, two really, really great kayak fishing media platforms, and some two really good people. So hope you guys enjoy that episode with Josh. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. We apologize again for last week not having any shows, and hopefully this made up for it. Biggest thing we ask of you guys when you guys are listening, watching this, obviously the majority of you guys are all subscribed, and we really, really appreciate that. Share this with any of your angling friends, people that are getting into fishing. Help them get them the right people like Josh on here to teach them about fishing. But also if you're listening, please give us a rating and review, especially if you're on Apple or Spotify. Helps us out immensely. Jim Lopez actually has an interesting last question coming in. You didn't play youth hockey growing up, did you, Andy?
No, just fun hockey. I didn't start playing ice hockey until I was like 22, I think, with a bunch of friends from work. And they convinced me to buy a bunch of gear. I always played like pond hockey and skated around. But I'll start it off because I know yours are probably a lot worse. The worst injury I ever had was really a black and blue eye. I took a puck that came off the glass at like a 45 degree angle and hit me right underneath the eye and opened up a big gash. And I had a black and blue eye for like 3 weeks. And yeah, had a big cut like right here. Like somebody punched me in the face. Yeah, ladies. Yeah, exactly.
Ladies are lining up.
Should have saw the other guy. Actually, should have saw the puck. I beat that puck.
Dude, yeah,
that's worse for me.
You did have like the coolest beer league jersey ever.
Oh yeah, it's still upstairs in my closet. The Jägermeisters. Awesome. Yeah, it's a good
one. We need to make a pact that if we actually get legitimate ice here. Because I realized that park near Darien Lake makes a skating rink.
Yeah.
We need to play pond hockey this winter.
I would love to. I need to get.
We invite anybody that listens to this in central Western New York. We'll do a meetup for pond hockey. We'll bring, actually, I don't know if you're allowed beer in public park in New York because New York's not fun. But we'll figure something out. And maybe we'll do a in-person show.
You know what we should do, man? Like Geico holds like a big pond hockey tournament down at the rink outside the arena every year. Maybe we should get like a serious angler team and compete.
Serious dangler team.
Yeah, serious dangler team. We could get some cool jerseys with like a fishing pole as a hockey stick or something and a bass.
I wonder if Blackfish would make us specialty jerseys.
That'd be fun. Like we should look into that. Yeah.
Wow. People are probably thinking these guys are freaking nuts.
I love hockey.
Injury wise, I would say longevity is when I got hit knee on knee. And I blew out my MCL, meniscus, all that fun jazz. That painful wise though, painful was broke my collarbone twice in the same spot. Here's the craziest thing. Here's a crazy story for you guys. I broke my collarbone. I was on defense. Kid was crossing the blue line, and I pinched and I closed the gap, laid a hit on him. He put his head down like a running back would, and his cage went into my collarbone, and that's how it broke. The first time I was stepping up to hit him. So I'm out for, I think it was like 3 months, and they bring me back. The doctor tried to rush me and get me back early because we had playoffs coming up. And dude,
yeah, like, that always works out.
Well. Yeah, right. Yeah, they're like, well, Calderon's always going to be soft until you're 21 or whatever.
Yeah.
And
cracked again.
Well, they call it the clavicle or whatever.
Yeah.
But dude, I felt good the first game back. It was the second game, the same rink, the same ice, the same team, and I step up in the same spot, same exact spot in the ice. Step up, headbutt, same thing, break it again, all over. It was just like, wow.
Yeah. Perfect explanation. Yes.
Big 69, it's hilarious. If anybody's not seen that movie,
I think what is better, the bubble or the cage? The fishbowl. The fish
bubble. I don't. People make fun of it. I don't care. You can see better. I hate the cage.
Oh, I hate the cage too. That's why I wear a half visor, and I wish I was smart enough to wear a fishbowl.
So. Oh, dude, bubble. So I had, I didn't have the full. I went to the full bubble my last year, but I had the visor with the half cage on the bottom. So like if puck wouldn't break, because I've seen too many of the full on bubbles break on the bottom because they're just strands of plastic.
Yeah.
Whereas you'd have the visor on top. I had the visor and then the metal cage on the bottom to protect my chin. So I could still see like it was a bubble, but I didn't have to deal with like it was stronger. That was, I mean, I looked like a total turd, but like that was the way to go. First. I saw way better too. You know, you don't have the whole cage.
And that wasn't fogging up because you could actually breathe out the cage.
Oh, it's still fogged up. It's still fogged up. But yeah, dude, there's been a lot of them. I've been stepped on a couple times. That was fun. One was pretty deep in my wrist. I could go. We need to have a hockey show. We're just gonna make a hockey show. Even if five people listen to it, I just love this. Is if it wasn't for fishing or hunting, dude, like hockey's it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like that would be my life. But yeah, all right, Jim. Thank you for taking us down memory lane. Yeah. That was cool. These questions are great. Enjoyed. But folks, appreciate you all. And we will see you guys on Friday. Peace. Well, that was an awesome show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you can and your app allows it, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us get seen more, which allows us to access more time and more variables to be able to bring to the show to make it better for you guys. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you liked some of the things we talked about in this episode and want to check out our show partners, all of that is in every single show description. You can click down there. It's got all of our discount codes, all of our links to our show partners, where you guys can go and support the people that support this show and help us make this show happen. And of course, this show does not happen without you guys. You guys know we appreciate you. You're the Searsanga fam. You're the reason we're here. Appreciate y'all. And we'll see y'all on the next one.